bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you joined us. Another spending bill has sailed through the People's House and to Biden's desk, and it wouldn't have happened without majority Democrat votes. Many Republicans are now furious, and there's even talk of pulling a Kevin McCarthy on Mike Johnson. Also, over the weekend, the Biden regime announced the launch of the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center, another attempt to infringe on our Second Amendment rights where legislation and the Supreme Court have failed. And in a few minutes, longtime TNA senior editor William F. Jasper joins us to talk about how severing ties with the UN may help with our border crisis. We have all that coming up. But first, a former CIA analyst of 30 years recently wrote something that explains why the policies coming out of Washington are so contrary to national interest. Wayne Allensworth wrote, "A subversive anti-American ruling elite has replaced America's old governing system, and the successor system treats America as an occupied zone of a global empire." Allensworth wrote that in Chronicles magazine in an article about NATO titled "An Obsolete Alliance Turned 75. A perfect example of these suicidal policies is our open border invitation. On Thursday, a large group of illegal immigrants charged and overran Texas National Guard troops at the U.S. southern border in El Paso. Video of the melee went viral. Reports say that about 600 illegal migrants were trying to get into the country when a group of all men broke through the razor wire and began shoving the soldiers out of the way. The incident left the Biden regime little choice but to comment. It's no secret that the people controlling Joe Biden have intentionally facilitated this border crisis. But like any capable, dishonest, and subversive government outfit trying to hold on to its illegitimate power, the Biden administration blamed its political opponent. The White House said Donald Trump is responsible because he encouraged Republicans to crush the bipartisan so-called border bill back in February. The proposal, of course, was a joke. It was really an amnesty bill that would have legalized border crossings. And in case you needed any more reason to be infuriated, you, the taxpayer, are paying for the border crisis. Have you noticed how well-fed and clothed most of these migrants who've been traveling hundreds, some thousands of miles are? As our viewing audiences can see, these migrants aren't emaciated. There are no holes in their clothes. Heck, some of them even seem to be wearing new clothes. They have backpacks with water bottles and food. And in their pockets, many of them have rechargeable credit cards, vouchers, money transfers. Where are they getting all this stuff? Well, as we recently reported, from outposts erected and run by the United Nations and NGOs throughout Central and South America. The U.S. is the largest funder of the UN, and many NGOs receive U.S. subsidies. But it gets even better. Historian Roger McGrath recently looked over the UN's 2024 update to its Regional Refugee and Migrant Response Plan and found that $1.59 billion U.S. dollars will be spent in 17 countries to further facilitate the invasion in 2024. But save some of your outrage, because we have more. As McGrath reports, in addition to the UN and the NGOs, there will now be safe mobility offices operated by the United States and some of the migrants' origin countries to facilitate the northward march to our borders. These mobility offices have already been established in Colombia, Ecuador, Costa Rica, and Guatemala. So when you know that the decision makers consider you an occupier in your own country, this all makes sense, doesn't it? Another thing that makes sense is what we can expect to happen here with all these unvetted illegals already in the country. And joining me to discuss that is executive senior editor of the New American magazine, Steve Bonta. Hey, Steve.
Hello, Paul.
So something happened in Moscow over the weekend, and we couldn't help but think that something like that is easily capable of happening here.
Well, I mean, yeah, I assume our viewers and listeners are more or less familiar with the contours of what happened. It was a massive terrorist attack.
Don't assume.
Allegedly, yeah, it was allegedly carried out by a new, brand new branch of the old ISIS group, called, or IS, if you prefer, called IS Khorasan, which is based supposedly in Afghanistan and which has also already carried out an attack in Iran, of all places. So this one was carried out by four Tajiki nationals living in Russia,
yeah,
with work visas, some of them expired, who, you know, so they were, in a sense, illegal immigrants on Russian territory, or at least had come there legally and overstayed their visa. And then they were contacted by these rather shadowy figures asking if they would need to make more money. and offering them a sum of money.
This is what they told Russian authorities, right?
So it's a very and this isn't really the focus of our story right now. So suffice it to say, it's a very tangled thing. It's hard to know who's in charge, but one thing is certainly clear, and that is that Putin is already using the incident to solidify his power, to blame his enemies, Ukraine, the U.S., whoever, and further extend the power of the police state in Russia. Now, there's really nothing preventing someone from doing something. I mean, obviously, we've already had lots of mass public shootings carried out by various disgruntled psychopaths and assembled weirdos
in
the United States. So far, we haven't had. I mean, the closest thing, I guess, was the school massacre in Colorado back in the late 1990s that was actually carried out by several
Columbine. You referring to
Columbine? The Columbine massacres. It's been a while now, but there's a lot of water over the dam. But anyway, I mean, but there's in theory nothing that would prevent a few of the doubtless numerous terrorist-connected individuals who've infiltrated the United States illegally over the last few years from simply going out, acquiring a few guns and ammo, and walking into a soft target, of which there are many, particularly in large cities where the people are generally disarmed, and certainly at large public events. Yep. You know, so as I remarked this morning in our meeting, you know, this is coming soon to a theater near you, literally, I expect. And it will probably happen at a time when it will be politically convenient in one way or another. So, you know, but it will certainly be followed by more calls to confiscate guns. This is just obviously one potential very serious ramification, but only one of a number that we could adduce with this unbelievable manufactured crisis that's occurring on our borders.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah, this invasion. I mean, you can't characterize it any other way.
No. And what gets me is that a lot of people know it's intentional, and there seems to be nothing that we can do. In the next segment, we're going to talk about, you know, how the House caved, the Republicans caved, and there's a lot to unpack there. But isn't it amazing that basically so many millions of people, including legislators and people with officials with power and influence, know what is happening, and yet we cannot stop this?
Okay, so we need to make crystal clear again our position on this, which I think a lot of people on the right, you know, really don't want to hear about it. You know, it's the old, you know, see no evil, hear no evil. It's too monstrous for a lot of people to contemplate. And it is this. Our country, including our federal government, is firmly in the grip of a malignant conspiracy that seeks the overthrow of our liberty, the destruction of our Constitution, and the obliteration of our traditional way of life, and its replacement with a Marxist socialist regime akin to what they have in China and they're getting back to in Russia. Yeah. And all the rest of this, okay, this has been around for, we've been warning about this, and we've been enduring brickbats from the respectable people on the right for decades, okay? If it isn't apparent by now that this is being done deliberately, and of course, the item that we're going to discuss in the next segment too, this deliberate capitulation of the GOP that we thought was our friend, but increasingly we're seeing that, there are some in the House particularly, and some in the Senate as well, who are genuine partisans of liberty and the Constitution. But they're still in a minority, and the people who control the levers of power would rather see the GOP lose its majority in the House, slim as it is, and fall into oblivion than allow actual reform. So our task here cannot be understated. We need to break the grip of this conspiracy on our country,
or it will
on our
destroy
government.
Us.
And it will. It is in the process of destroying us before our very eyes, and this is no mean task. I believe it is still possible, maybe, to accomplish this at the ballot box. That's what we're all hoping. But the struggle ahead, whatever it entails, is going to be brutal. And we're just beginning to see what happens when what they like to call the deep state, but we ought to call it what it is. Yeah. From time to time, it's a conspiracy when it feels threatened, as it does right now.
It sure does.
They're pulling out all the stops. They're literally throwing down the borders, opening the gates, and inviting in all the enemies of our country at this time that they can possibly get here.
Well said, Steve. Very well said. All right, after this, we are going to talk about what happened over the weekend in the House with this funding bill, and we will be right back.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
There's chaos in the House once again, and Mike Johnson's days as Speaker of the House, along with the GOP majority itself, may be numbered. Last Thursday, the House voted to fund yet another continuing budget resolution in the form of a $1.2 trillion funding package. And yet again, this bill went through without any Democrat concessions on any key Republican demands, the southern border included. The bill passed with overwhelming Democrat support, but with only 101 Republican votes. 112 Republicans voted against it. The 1,000-page legislation was released at 2 a.m. Thursday morning, but Speaker Johnson held a vote Friday morning, violating rules intended to give lawmakers enough time to look over legislation. This latest cave has infuriated people like Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene and Congressman Andy Biggs, both of whom have been featured in recent interviews with the New American Magazine. Here's Andy Biggs.
So the gentlelady from Connecticut said that in this bill, they were able to successfully reject Republicans' requests for spending reductions and rejected Republicans' requests for riders. And yet somehow the Republicans are going to vote for that? That's outrageous. She's right, though. She got the spending. She killed the riders. And when I hear that a vote for this is a vote for China, a vote against this is a vote for China, what you're really saying is a vote for this is a vote for Chinese terrorism, because we've had over 30,000 illegal aliens from China come across the border with this border policy. What you're going to get is you're voting actually to speed up the process of redistribution of illegal aliens who come in, because that's what the funding's going to go for.
MTG has filed a motion to oust Johnson from the speakership, just like what happened to Kevin McCarthy last year.
This is a betrayal of the American people. This is a betrayal of Republican voters. And the bill that we were forced to vote on forced Republicans to choose between funding to pay our soldiers and in doing so, funding late-term abortion. This bill was basically a dream and a wish list for Democrats and for the White House. It was completely led by Chuck Schumer, not our Republican Speaker of the House, not our conference, and we weren't even allowed to put amendments to the floor to have a chance to make changes to the bill. I filed the motion to vacate today, but it's more of a warning and a pink slip. I respect our conference. I paid all my dues to my conference. I'm a member in good standing, and I do not wish to inflict pain on our conference and to throw the house in chaos. But this is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
Meanwhile, many so-called moderates are thinking about following the footsteps of Kevin McCarthy and Mike Gallagher into premature retirement. This raises the very real possibility that the House GOP could resign itself into minority status before this fall's elections are even held. Okay, Steve, so this would be something that has never happened. I'm not sure this is the kind of precedent.
To my knowledge, I mean, I'm not an expert on congressional history, but it's pretty hard for me to imagine that anything like this has ever happened before. You know, they
this is crazy.
There was no red wave in the 2022 elections, mm-hmm. but they did, as forecast, did take over the majority in the House by what I think a 5 or 6 vote margin to begin with.
Yeah.
And so they kicked out one of their own. George Santos.
And then now
there's been a steady, you know, then Kevin McCarthy resigned.
Left. He took his ball and left.
Right?
He took his ball and left.
And now we got Ken Buck going, Mike Gallagher going. So we're down to one.
That's crazy.
There are others that are threatening, you know, all of them rhinos, of course, all of them who are angry at the fact that people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy and the rest of that, them are trying to get them to grow a backbone.
Yeah.
And actually make a difference. And this kind of relates to what we were discussing in the last segment, because one of the realities of the conspiracy that's in control of our government, the deep state, if you prefer, if that's a more familiar, comfortable term.
Yeah. Is the Uniparty.
Is the Uniparty, this phenomenon of the Uniparty, this which is, you know, I mean, it was articulated very well back in the day. By Carol Quigley,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
saying, well, you know, part of the game plan here in the United States is to create two parties with the apparent with the appearance of opposition, but that stand for the same core globalist principles.
Yeah,
and for socialism.
So the taxpayers,
so
and
we
the
can
voters,
throw them out in turn and feel like we're winning a vote.
Yeah.
So obviously that's not happening, and it's becoming so acutely egregious now that a lot of people are realizing, wow. You know, you can vote for Republicans and somehow they always manage to self-sabotage. And we've seen this before. The GOP's role, at least, you know, the rhino role, the people who matter in the GOP are just as committed to the core tenets of globalism. For example, the maintenance of the Federal Reserve and fiat money system, the maintenance of the U.S.'s involvement in the United Nations, the continued maintenance of the United States for military, you know, as world's policemen, all of these other core conceits, you know, the heavy graduate income tax, which is another you know, key part of the Marxist program. These things never change from one administration to the next, from
but
one Congress to
the next. But
this
is what you get when there is an attempt.
And this is what you get when the people who've maintained this state of affairs for many generations now, for like 100 years plus, okay, we've been in the grip of this.
Yes.
And it's getting worse and worse. Now, they're afraid that something may actually happen. So there are people, and to circle back to my thought, there are people in the Republican Party, the key people, who are all okay with that, who are maybe conservatives in some very vague sense of the word, other, but they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to change the status quo, and they're prepared to fall on their swords if necessary to make sure that their role of sabotaging any effectiveness the GOP might have, any beholdenness that they might have to their grassroots, to the demands of the grassroots, to prevent that from coming to pass. And that's what we're seeing now. And they are literally on the brink of saying, okay, well, if things keep going the way they are, if you continue to exist, that we actually do something about the border, or that we actually say, oh, I don't know, shut down the government and make Biden and the Democrats blink instead of always getting to the point where they're popping the champagne corks after they roll the Republicans yet again. If we're in danger, well, that's fine. We'll just call on a few more rhinos. They will resign prematurely.
That's what's happening.
Well, it was mentioned this morning, for example, here in Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher is resigning, and he's doing it in such a way that his own district is not going to be represented until the next Congress. Because he deliberately decided to resign after the deadline for holding a special election.
So he's sabotaging.
He's deliberately sabotaging. He's making sure that there won't be someone else like him or some other Republican. You know, he's basically saying, if you don't have me, you can't have anybody at all. And this is what's going on now. And you know,
that guy deserves never
to
be in Congress
again. So we are
on
the precipice. And, you know, so if you, you know, and what we could see happen in the next few weeks or months is, you know, the Republican majority will resign itself literally into oblivion. And Jeffries, who is a hardcore Marxist, will take over as Speaker of the House. All of the investigations will instantly
cease.
Be shut down. OK, the border will be thrown wide open. If necessary, Texas will be brought to heel if they think they can do it by military force or whatever. The January 6th stuff will continue. The sabotage of the upcoming election will continue. We're in a very, very, very narrow tightwalk right now.
Yeah, and people have to realize, just like you said last segment, this is the result of the machine pushing back when it's threatened. Like you said, they've been doing this for 100 years. Now, I'd like to say that the silver lining in this is that if we wouldn't have these so-called hardliners, these real people who are devoted to America First principles, we wouldn't be seeing any of this. It'd be business as usual, right? Because there wouldn't be enough Matt Gaetz and MTGs and whatever to matter. And the people like Mike Gallagher would continue on. Now, these people, they're disgusting to me, man. They're saboteurs. I mean, how could you call yourself a conservative? What are you conserving by letting the budget run amok, by letting the borders open? You're not conserving America. What is it do they think they're conserving?
Well, in a way, they are a bit conserving. They're conserving the status quo, which is America, the American deep state, okay? And I think that, you know, if the GOP becomes too much more unruly, we may see a move by the deep state to take down the GOP, just as they took down the Whig Party in the 1850s and replaced it with another fake party, you know, that posed as the savior of the country, you know, the Republican Party and Abe Lincoln and all that. And we could see something similar happen in our time.
Well, we could also see perhaps a third party coming out. That's something that the...
Put not your trust in political parties.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Next up, we look at this new office the Biden administration set up to likely weasel around our Second Amendment rights. If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two. One for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and The Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. Since Americans are occupying global territory, it makes sense why the Biden regime would do everything it can to disarm us. On Saturday, Joe Biden's Department of Justice announced the launch of the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center. The supposed goal is to provide training and technical assistance to law enforcement officials, prosecutors, attorneys, judges, clinicians, victim service, and social service providers, community organizations, and behavioral health professionals responsible for implementing laws designed to keep guns out of the hands of people who pose a threat to themselves or others. Now, unless this is empty pandering to rabid anti-gun lobbies, it is likely another ploy designed to weasel in gun restrictions of the type Americans have resoundingly rejected. Second Amendment violations have been defeated by Congress, by the courts, and certainly by the majority of states that are now constitutional carry. Some Republicans were pretty surprised by this. Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massey tweeted, "What is this? A federal red flag center? We did not authorize this," announced, of course, just hours after the omnibus passes. Utah Senator Mike Lee tweeted, "Nope." And Georgia Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted, "Merrick Garland just announced a massive red flag operation that the DOJ will be running by using every spy tool the U.S. government has in order to violate America's Second Amendment. This comes right after Johnson fully funded Biden's weaponized DOJ. This office was established with the help of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions. It comes 2 years after Congress passed the bipartisan Safer Communities Act. The programs apply to mental health courts, drug courts, and veterans treatment courts." So, Steve, there are about a million different ways this thing can go wrong. I think it's like over 30.
What thing?
Oh, this office that we just talked
about. Okay. No, I'm just not sure you're talking about the grand scheme of things or this specific.
This specific office, I don't think we've had enough time to look over whatever it is. It's actually, the page itself is very short. There's not a whole lot in it. But you know, they're always trying to figure a way to weasel around to get our guns, to whatnot. And so by using mental health, I think it serves as a convenient ploy because now they can define what is mental health. Well, almost 40 million people are on antidepressants in America. And, you know, they can apply that. Then maybe they can move on to people who live with those kind of people if they're on antidepressants, anti-anxieties and whatnot. So they made the people crazy somewhat, and now they're going to disarm them. That's just one of many ways I see that this could go.
Well, I mean, you know, there's little question that the Second Amendment is probably the number one target of the deep state and all of its myrmidons. I think so, because it really it is the ultimate bulwark of American liberty. Yeah, I know people don't like to talk about that either, right? We all think the Second Amendment is about protecting your right to go grouse hunting and maybe even to defend your home. And these are nice, wonderful things you can do with firearms, but they aren't the main ultimate reason for having the Second Amendment.
Right, that's not why they came up with it.
Everybody knows this. You know, I mean, the left loves to deny it and say, well, there's the militia cause, and that means that they really wasn't under, you know, they have all these strange torture. They know very well why the Second Amendment was put in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, and they are determined to destroy it by any means possible. It looks like they're not going to be able to do it by amending the Constitution anytime soon.
They can't even get it through Congress.
Yeah, the politics
aren't
there.
Even Obama couldn't get it through.
Sure, but what they do, you know, it's even getting hard to pass gun control legislation. Back in the day, 30 plus years ago, almost 30 years ago, when they passed the so-called assault weapons ban in Congress, you know, even back then in the very anti-gun climate of the Clinton administration and that, you know, the politics of that, they were only able to get it for a period of for 10 years. And then it was sunsetted and we haven't seen it since. So, you know, I mean, obviously, best case scenario, you pass the unconstitutional law and then dare the Supreme Court to do anything about it. And if you're lucky, they'll let it stand as they did the, you know, the 86 Firearms Act, the 1968 There's a whole string of these things that go back, all of which are unconstitutional, none of which have been overturned. And frankly, you know, I don't see any prospect of that happening anytime soon.
The Second Amendment is going to make it hard for them to take over the what they see as the occupied people. And the Second Amendment is one of the, I would call that a victory. It's one of the few victories I think we've had over the last 20 years. You can see the spike. I think I did a story a couple weeks back. And, you know, when you take FBI inquiries, because every background check, they know at least about the background check. You can see that since 2010, there's been a massive spike in background checks, which indicates that there's been a massive spike in gun ownership. Now, as opposed to 10 years ago, more than half of Americans are armed. It used to be 42%. We are now at 52%. So this is an example of a campaign that actually has gone our way. Now, obviously, I know that you and I, neither of us wanted to come to that. But like you said, that's why that thing is there. We see our government has turned against us. It is malignant. Like you said, it is conspiratorial and it seeks to destroy us. And it's important that we have this. Should it come to us needing to use them? We're trying to avoid all that. The John Birch Society has been here since 1958, trying to avoid what it looks like it could end up being, and that being a clash between the government against its people, or at least the road.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm heaven forfend that it comes to that. And, you know, we certainly don't
advocate,
but, you know, a lot of people are aware. There's this growing awareness, you know,
we have to talk about it because people are thinking it.
Well, and the thing is, too, I mean, most of the victories that have been won, and there have been a lot of them, have been at the state level, where you've had states going back to so-called constitutional carry and all this sort of thing. At the same time, though, there have been a lot of states like Illinois and Massachusetts and California,
New York,
where they've been outright
Washington.
Where they've been successfully banning whole classes of weapons.
Yes.
And not getting really any serious pushback at the Supreme Court level. Because unfortunately, okay, the Heller decision, and I remember when the Heller decision came out, I was actually I think I was still on staff at the time, but I remember reading it right away and communicating with headquarters and saying, this is not a good decision because there's a hole in it that you can drive a truck through. And the hole is where they say, well, you know, we do think, you know, there's possibility for the government to maybe it has a compelling interest to ban certain weapons like M16s. And it goes on, it actually lists, I think, M16s in the Heller decision. And I said, well, that nullifies the whole thing. The decision should have been like one paragraph, and it should have said, well, you know, the Second Amendment means, in effect, as it says in the Pennsylvania Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be questioned by the federal government. End of story. Okay. And but they didn't. They went on page after page after page in the majority decision. And of course, they opened up these cans of worms. And I predicted at the time what this is going to do in the end is it's going to strengthen. People are going to, we're going to get around to the point where they say, well, the Heller's decision does say that the Second Amendment protects the right to keep and bear arms, but it also says that the government probably has some say in determining what those arms shall be.
Yeah.
Okay. So
does it
quite
list?
Frankly, you can torture the language of the Heller decision quite easily into meaning, well, you know, you should have the right to own single shot 22s and air rifles and maybe, single shot. You know,
so you think this will open
like
the doorway?
But all the good stuff, we're going to take that away, or we're going to very heavily regulate, or we're going to require like other quote unquote civilized countries that if you have those weapons, they need to be kept locked at a gun club and you can only access them and will only allow you to have 50 rounds of ammunition per year and all this stuff.
Like the Canadians and the Brits.
That's, like the Canadians, the Brits, the Japanese, most of the Europe, continental Europe and so forth. Okay. But, you know, Heller, frankly, if you look at it, does leave enough latitude for the wrong judiciary and the wrong Congress to decide. So I don't know, you know.
Yeah. I want to go back to this office, this new office that they established and that surprised everyone. It seems like, based on the little that we know, among the components or the elements who are going to kind of be responsible for determining who I suppose is fit or unfit, it's going to be behavioral health officials or specialists. Now, right. I used to cover that beat back in my reporting days. And I'll say that a lot of the people who are in behavioral health actually were mentally ill themselves. That's how they kind of got into it. But I'm not necessarily saying that's the case for all behavioral health. But these are not people who should be making those kind of decisions. Because when it comes to behavioral health specialists and people who are in that field, they know this. These people think that everyone has a mental illness. Because now they have a DSM that's this thick. And everything is a mental disorder. And I see that going very wrong very quickly.
Well, I mean, and a lot of states like Wisconsin here does have, you know, you're not allowed to own weapons if you're mentally ill. But they define it so far rather narrowly.
So broad, yeah.
Well, no, they find it here, at least in Wisconsin, it's fairly narrow. You know, you have to have actually been, I think, interned. I looked into the law.
Okay, so you have to have been committed or something like
that?
Yeah,
this type of thing.
Okay.
But that won't necessarily be the case forever. And certainly in a nationwide
basis.
Absolutely,
that's my fear.
Yeah.
After this, Bill Jasper joins me to discuss getting out of the UN.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you, for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
My next guest has been warning about the dangers of the UN for decades, way before it became trendy. William F. Jasper is a longtime senior editor here at the New American Magazine, and he recently wrote the article, Invasion USA, Globalist Summit Wants to Spur More Mass Migration, which you can read at thenewamerican.com. Bill now joins us to discuss how getting out of the UN fits into all this unfettered illegal immigration we have to stop. Hey, Bill.
Glad to be here.
So, Bill, how does all this migration help the globalists?
Well, if you're going to destabilize the United States and make it more amenable to a merger into a world government, migration is a very important tool for it. And we've been writing about this in The New American for a long time. The whole move to create International Organization for Migration. It's not the International Organization on Migration. The IOM is the International Organization for Migration. They present migration as a good thing. And they say in their documents, the IOM is the UN's major organization on promoting migration. There is also the UN High Commission for Refugees, which also promotes it. But the IOM has taken over for this. And the story you're referring to there concerns the January World Forum that they held in Geneva, which is where the IOM and many of the UN agencies are located. And they brought together all of the people, NGOs, and foundations, the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Soros Foundations, that have been promoting this for a couple of decades now. The whole program is to conflate migration with immigration. In immigration, a country, a nation state, a sovereign state determines who may enter their country, on what time schedule and under what conditions, under what parameters. And that's a standard feature of national sovereignty. But the migrationists started over a decade ago to change the whole terminology from immigration to migration, and to conflate and confuse the two terms, and to say that migrants have a right to migrate to wherever they need to go, or think they need to go, or want to go. And so it is a serious attack on national sovereignty, which we're seeing now at our southern border, which is almost non-existent. And this has been the cry not only of communists at the street level, who say no ban, no wall, no borders at all. That's been one of their cries for a long time. And the migrationists at the international level, like the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Economic Forum, the Aspen Institute, all these globalist elite organizations, they've been pushing this at the same time, that we have to break down borders and break down national sovereignty.
Well, what you're talking about is propaganda, and you see it whenever you do have this discussion. When people are saying they express some sort of antagonism to this unfettered illegal migration, all these illegals coming through, they conflate it with, you know, asylum and legal immigration, which I am a benefiter. I benefited from that, so I get it. Now, this makes sense if the goal is, and if they see the whole world as this global empire, and so that's essentially, they're basically trying to put the last pieces together, right? I mean, but they have, is it that they have to get the United States out of the way? And is this one of the
United States is and always has been the big obstacle, because we are so prosperous, we have been so powerful. And so how are you going to crack that nut? Well, a number of ways. You get the United States to go into debt, spending all the money wildly, going into debt, getting us globe straddling programs all over the world with military operations and so-called humanitarian operations. But at the same time, if you want to destabilize the homeland, you swamp it with people. They're coming from over 150 different countries, and massive numbers that aren't vetted, that are not checked, that are not going through the standard immigration process.
Yeah.
We know we're getting terrorists. We know we're getting criminals of the worst kind. And even those that are not are becoming a huge burden on our social safety net, and on all of our social services, all of our schools and hospitals. So it's if you want to destroy a country, and we're seeing the social havoc that it is causing, the chaos and the crime, as many of these migrants who come here become gangs, threatening the people. We're seeing all the squatters taking over houses throughout the country. So this is obviously a very effective way of destroying the United States. And we see it all over Latin America, but particularly in Mexico, where the United Nations, there's over a dozen of the United Nations agencies, the UNESCO, UNICEF, the UN High Command for Refugees, UN Migration Office, and hundreds of NGOs that are getting money through the UN agencies from our State Department, funding all of this and encouraging this mass migration, this invasion. It is an invasion.
Yeah.
And it's going to have horrendous, it's already having horrendous impact on us. And so this effort to get us out of the United Nations with the Defund Act in the Senate and in the House is critically important. If only for this one crisis area, the migration invasion. But of course, there are many other things that the UN is posing a threat to us in numerous ways, like the World Health Organization treaty and things like that.
Yeah, and that's coming up soon. How come there isn't a bigger effort? I mean, Andy Biggs, I think he's the main sponsor in Mike Lee in the Senate of this.
Mike Lee in the Senate, and Chip Roy was the one who introduced it in the House. The House bill is H.R. 6645, and the Senate bill is S.R. 3428.
Right.
They're identical bills. And I've been working on this for many years, and we had sponsorships for similar bills like this in the 1980s and 90s, and Congressman Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Repeatedly introduced these, but we never got anything into the Senate, and we didn't have the House support that we do now. Mm-hmm. So I think this migrant invasion is helping to galvanize this, along with many of the other scandals with the UN, like the Hamas UN.
It's just sad that it had to get to this, and I don't know. We shouldn't even be patting ourselves on the back because there's nothing to really celebrate here, but hopefully it's not too late. What are your last thoughts on that? Is it still possible to get out of the UN and to build back, albeit through some serious turbulence in the future?
Well, it definitely is. I mean, we can get out of the UN. We can't delude ourselves. It's going to be a big fight because there is a huge entrenched interest in keeping it going. But this is a major achievement that we should be.
It's a good step. It's a good step. I like that optimistic look. Thanks, Bill Jasper. We're going to have you back. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. We will see you tomorrow.